The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Prepare your ears, humans. Happy, Sad, Confused begins now.
Today on Happy, Sad, Confused, Graham McTavish from The Hobbit and Outlander to House of the Dragon. Hey guys, welcome to another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Yes, we've got Mr. Graham McTavish on the show today, a first-time guest, though someone I've done a whole lot with. Thrilled to finally, though, have him on the official podcast. More on the great Graham McTavish in a second. First, let's talk about other things going on, other stuff I've seen, other stuff I've been up to, bring you up to speed. We were dark last week. I apologize. Post-Comic-Con, guys, I just got, like, I don't know. It was a weird time. I was certainly exhausted and overwhelmed by everything that had happened. And then the booking gods didn't shine well on me. We didn't have a guest for last week, but I'm through apologizing because I'm about to unfurl so many podcast guests, so many cool bookings, that you're going to be saying, enough, Josh. Just give me a break. There'll be some weeks maybe with some multiple guests. I have just booked somebody I am so damn excited for, and I know you guys hate it when I tease, and I'm not going to reveal anything. I'm just because I don't want to jinx it. It hasn't happened yet, but I booked somebody that's never done the podcast that I can't think of someone, frankly, bigger that I have sought in the acting realm. I'll leave it at that. It's going to be great. More on that in 2 or 3 weeks. What else? Oh, I want to give a little plug to a great new doc that doesn't need my help, but because it's like dominating the charts right now on Netflix. It's a train wreck, Woodstock 99. I think it was 3 parts. I watched it all in one night. A really, I guess I was going to say an easy watch. Not that it's like all fun, because it's pretty, gets pretty dark at times, but it is a chronicle, of course, of the Woodstock Festival in 1999 that, you know, if you think the Fyre Festival invented festivals that went awry, think differently, because Woodstock 99 certainly had some issues, to say the least. A friend of mine, a former colleague of mine, was an integral part of this documentary. I think he's the first person you've seen the documentary, David Blaustein, a great guy who's always been really kind to me for years, did a ton on ABC Radio, a great entertainment journalist. And back in the day, in 99, it was like, I think one of his first, if not first, gigs was being at Woodstock, and he's all over this doc. So it was really exciting to see him in it. Check it out for him. He's always great, but also check it out because this is a fascinating chronicle of what went wrong in Woodstock 99. It's also fascinating for me because so much of it involves MTV, which, of course, I didn't join MTV till a few years later, but it's fascinating to see the kind of like that last guard of MTV folks that preceded me in the middle of that mad story. So that's my recommendation of the week. Other things to mention. I have no new live events to announce, except to say we're close on a few. So stay tuned to my Twitter and Instagram, Joshua Horowitz. Go to the Patreon page, patreon.com/happysayconfused, because we are definitely going to have some live events to announce very soon in New York City. I'll be moderating something at New York Comic Con, but even sooner than that, I have a feeling I'll be doing something at the 92Y. I have another event at Symphony Space in October that will be announced very soon. So a lot cooking. Good time. I've been moderating a bunch. I did an event with Ron Howard, the director of 13 Lives, which is a film you should check out on Amazon Prime right now. It chronicles the crazy Thai cave disaster that, I mean, thankfully had a mostly happy ending. But this is a dramatic retelling that stars Viggo Mortensen and Colin Farrell, Joel Edgerton. But anyway, I did a Q&A with Ron at like a guild event in New York City, and it was just lovely to see him. He is, as advertised, the nicest guy in the biz. So that was fun. I feel like I did another event recently. I don't know. Been busy. But yeah, also we have a Comedy Central bit coming very soon that we taped with Mark Wahlberg and Kevin Hart. So stay tuned for that. Okay, let's talk about the big event today, which is Graham McTavish, who has, as I said, shockingly never done the podcast, though we've, of course, talked a bunch. I've done events with him and Sam Heughan. That's the first of many times you'll hear Sam's name invoked today. But I think I actually first met him through Preacher at Comic-Con, but then, of course, got to know him through his Outlander Association and his Sam Association, and now... I get it. He's great. He's great. Not only is he a great actor, but he's just like a really intelligent, good-natured, easy guy to talk to, and I had a blast catching up with him. This was actually a live virtual conversation we had, so we're experimenting with new things on the Patreon page, and I'm very excited about it. We did a live conversation, me and Sammy, my trusty producer friend, a couple days ago with just you, the fans, on Patreon. And then we went right into this. We did a live version of this podcast where a whole bunch of the Patreon members came in, asked their questions, and just enjoyed it in that live atmosphere. It's a really cool interface using something called Crowdcast. Super easy for me and for the fans. So if you go to patreon.com/happysadconfused, and if you're at the exclusive shows level or up, you'll have access to certain live events. Certainly the live events with me and Sammy talking to you guys, and on occasion I will try to book a guest live. We'll see. We're experimenting with different models, but just a new way to, you know, give some bang for your buck on the Patreon page. Again, patreon.com/happysadconfused. Doing a lot of fun stuff there. One more thing to plug. I've launched, finally, in recent weeks, my own YouTube page. It's youtube.com/Josh Horowitz. I'll put it in the show notes. Give it a subscribe, because we're putting all the old video versions of the podcast, all the old video versions of Game Night. So after you get those exclusively for a while on the Patreon, they eventually go on YouTube. So there's a very large body of work that is accumulating on the YouTube page very quickly, and it's a really fun deep dive for me, frankly, to look at like my old work, but also hopefully for you guys to see some video conversations maybe you've never seen in full if you're not on the Patreon. So really happy and excited about what we're doing on the YouTube page. Again, youtube.com/Josh Horowitz. Check it out. And that's totally free. So, you know, it's a no-brainer. All right, let's get to the main event. What you're going to hear, and it's going to sound maybe a little different only because this was done live, but the next thing you're going to hear is me launching in with Graham live for this podcast conversation. And there might be some visual things that are lost in the translation on the podcast, but as always, very little. I think you're going to enjoy it. I know you're going to enjoy it. And I should say, Graham was on primarily beyond just entertaining me and the audience to promote his new series, House of the Dragon, which... is the Game of Thrones prequel series. I mean, it doesn't get any more high profile than that. I don't think this one has any chance of not succeeding, given what I've seen of it. I've seen the first episode. It has an amazing ensemble. Matt Smith, who we love, of course, Patty Considine, Rhys Ifans, the list goes on and on. And it's Game of Thrones, guys. And it feels like Game of Thrones, but different. It's epic. It's going to satisfy. It debuts, I believe it's August 21st on HBO. Check it out. And in the meanwhile, enjoy my chat with the great Graham McTavish. Ladies and gentlemen of the podcast world, if you're listening to us, if you're watching us, if you're live with us, we love you all the more. It is I, Josh Horowitz, but more importantly, it is my guest, Mr. Graham McTavish. Graham, welcome to the podcast, sir.
Josh, always a pleasure to podcast with you, if that is indeed a thing.
It's a verb now.
Yes, it sounds like a sort of strange sport that's only played in the north of Finland or something. But yeah,
it's the one sport I'm decent at, actually.
Well, that's one more than me. So,
I do not believe you. I've seen the workouts. It's good to see you, my friend. Thank you for taking the time to do this.
I'm so thrilled that we have this live audience watching along with us. If you're live, we love you all the more. If you're watching this in 12 years, we still love you after the apocalypse. Wow, we hope you're enjoying this as a nice, you know,
the end of the world moment when you're looking at this. Let's look at that podcast again.
Exactly. Yeah. One more time. Yeah. So let me tell the audience, first of all, we're going to have a great chat today, Graham and I, as we always do. We're going to talk about a great many things, including his amazing new series, House of the Dragon, which is going to have, I think, a sizable number of you very much interested. I've seen the first episode.
People might watch it. Yes.
I have a sneaky suspicion. We're also going to take some questions from you guys. So here's how this is going to work. Some of you are very smart already. You've seen the Ask a Question button at the bottom of your screen. Click on that Ask a Question button, write in your question, and if you are so bold, if you feel like it, and you want to be potentially on camera if we select your question, just write that in the question. Say, cool to be on camera, yes on camera, just so I know. I don't want to put anybody on the spot, certainly.
No, we will not put you on the spot.
No. So we'll get to your questions in a bit, but first let's catch up, Graham, you and I.
Yes.
I feel like you're a pretty busy man in showbiz, which is a good problem to have for any working actor. You were just telling me, are we allowed to say what you're working on right now?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're working on The Witcher right now.
Yeah, I am working on The Witcher, yes, which has been great. Great fun. Really enjoyable, actually.
Are you generally the kind that likes to have work back to back to back? Do you need some downtime?
The thing is, Josh, the thing I've learned over my immensely long career, as Sam would love to remind you of, how old I am, but I've been doing this for nearly 40 years now, and it honestly doesn't matter whether you're busy or not busy. You always have this terrible fear. I mean, I think it was Paul Newman, actually, who said that he always imagined that somebody was going to come up to him and tap him on the shoulder and say, oh, I'm terribly sorry, there's been a mistake. You're terrible.
Right.
You're awful. And every actor I know believes that there's always a little tiny bit of you that is going, you're a complete fraud. You're a complete fraud. They're eventually going to see through it. And I think it comes with the territory of pretending constantly to be someone else when you're working, that's going to just come unstuck in some way. But
not to mention all the years that every actor suffers of rejection. Even the best actors are denied for years. So like that's ingrained into you too, no matter how long.
Course.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And I mean, and that's, you know, in all seriousness, that's one of the reasons I think that Sam and I, wanted to do something like Men in Kilts, for instance, and write the books, because you actually, and in his case, you know, the whiskey and all the rest of it, that it takes, you have more control over your life. And certainly when we were doing Men in Kilts, one of the things that we loved about it was that we were literally calling the shots. We were, especially in the first season, we were the guys on the ground going, right, let's shoot this. And then we would just start talking to whoever we were with.
Yeah.
But it felt very liberating. Whereas in your regular life as an actor,
almost no control.
You're waiting for them to go, it's okay. We'll let you do it for today.
For 6 minutes, you can work.
Yes,
that struck me actually about the, because I didn't realize when you guys first did Men in Kilts, like just how run and gun it was at first. Like you basically were creating like a presentation tape to sell to what eventually became stars, and you just did it essentially on your own.
Yes, we did. I mean, it went from, I mean, I think a lot of people may know this, but it went from me having an idea of years and years ago, 30 years ago, about doing DVDs about clans, and then him ringing me saying, hey, you know, that thing that you were talking about doing a documentary, would you want to do that? Yes. Let's do it as a podcast. No. Let's do it with GoPros on our faces. No. And then he got, it's incredible. I would actually love to have tried that just to see what it looked like. Just a GoPro on his forehead.
Right. You can't cover the moneymaker though, Graham, for either of you. You can't block any part of your face. What are you thinking?
but he, and then Sam said, look, let's just crew it up and get some of the guys we know from Outlander.
Right.
And we literally became this weird little dysfunctional group on the road, charging from one place to another. We had this wonderful, producer on it, Michelle Medfin, who helped us enormously with right. just the logistics of it. And yeah, we were run and gun is exactly right. We were, you know, got into the van. He was still hungover. I had no idea. I was very hungover. He was technically still drunk, I think. Maybe. I'm not sure.
I mean, he's always at a base level. There's always like a slight whiskey content in the blood that can't be erased. Yeah.
You hadn't thought of that. Yeah, there's always just a kind of undercurrent of booze that just follows him around. And but then we drove straight to a whiskey tasting. And
there, perfect. It's going to catch up with them one of these days, I hope, at least.
Oh, it will, yes.
But it strikes me, on a serious note, like you're on the acting side, because, like, I mean, like, we've talked a bunch in recent years, and I've looked at sort of, like, your body of work, and you have been working virtually your entire life. But, like, it's fair to say, correct me if I'm wrong, that the last 10 years have been by far the most prosperous, at least in film and TV. You've been doing theater forever, et cetera. But, like, what do you make of that? Does that give you a different perspective when you're a jobbing actor for decades and then all of a sudden Preacher, Hobbit, Outlander, the Game of Thrones spinoff? Like, this is the stuff people are aspiring to all their lives, and it all kind of has happened to you now.
I'm certainly aware of it, and I'm very appreciative of it and all of that stuff. I mean, I think... What having a career, you know, when I did The Hobbit, I was just about to turn 50, so I got The Hobbit when I was 49,
right.
And you know, I'd obviously been working for the best part of 30 years up till that point, and I'd worked, you know, I'd actually always made a living as an actor, but it's a precarious world, but I. So having that context for anything that I'm doing now, particularly when I did The Hobbit, because that was such a great opportunity. When I was on set, you know, a lot of people who will remain nameless complained about the costume, the right. uncomfortable, the prosthetic, the days, the hours, the fighting, the tiredness, and all the rest of it. And I never complained, because I knew how lucky I was to be standing there doing that, because I knew, you know, I'd had 30 years of dreaming of doing something like that. And for it to be a reality, it was the same when I did Rambo with Stallone. You know, when I'm standing there on set looking at a man who I grew up with as Rambo, you know, I had this complete out-of-body experience on that job where he was talking to me in a take and I was delivering my lines, but at the same time, I was aware that there was like a ticker tape saying, you're talking to Rambo.
Yep.
And it was like that Schwarzenegger film, The Last Action Hero, where the kid steps into the movie and whatever it was that kind of feeling. And so I'm very appreciative of what I'm doing. And it makes you more kind of energetic for stuff. So Sam, I know, actually in a weird way, I'm maybe speaking out of turn, you know, he would maybe say something different, but I know for him that Outlander was obviously a fantastic opportunity, and he'd be the first person to admit it. And, you know, it's not like he had some gigantic film and television career prior to that.
Sure.
So he also is aware of the business. And I think both he and I, and going back to Men in Kilts, want to make hay while the sun shines, really. You know, it's we want to keep doing interesting stuff, or I certainly do, and I know he does. You know, keep ahead of them until they catch up with you and go, no, back in the box for you.
It's not going to happen, thankfully. But I've said it before, I'll say it again. All the best of them have imposter syndrome. Every actor worth his salt thinks they're going to have the rug pulled out on them. And I don't trust the ones, frankly, that think they have it made.
That's the one to worry about. No, well, you have to. I think the one thing that you have to have, well, maybe more than one thing, well, many things, but one of them is a sort of edge and a hunger.
Right.
And a sort of that kind of... engine inside you that is propelling you forwards. The moment where you just sort of go, well, it's all done. I'm I'm finished. It's all great. I think that's when the wheels will eventually come off. But either that or drug rehabilitation.
All right.
That's years away. Years.
Let's talk. Can you give us a little taste of so Men in Kilts season two? You shot different locale, not in Scotland, but a familiar land for you at least, new for Sam.
New Zealand. Yep.
That's right. So I don't think we have a release date yet, but I'm hoping relatively soon we'll get some news.
They always keep these things very close to their chest. I mean, I have no idea when The Witch was going to come out. We didn't know when House of the Dragon was going to come out until. And that's only because I know the showrunner.
Right.
I think I found out in like May, something like that, April.
Right.
And the same with The Witcher and with Men in Kilts, the same. So I don't know. I would be guessing that it would come out before the next season of Outlander. That would make sense. Yes.
One drafting off the other. So who, is there more aggravation on one side or the other this time? What can we look forward to in terms of just Men in Kilts?
I mean,
we don't like to see you happy. We want to see you drive each other insane on the brink of madness.
The edge of the abyss.
Exactly. Just that one step away,
staring into the abyss. And the abyss happens to be called Sam Heughan.
Those beautiful eyes.
He just insisted on making me more scared.
He lives for it, honestly, Graham. And I feel privileged to say this. I feel like he lives to torment you and I. I mean, you are closer with him than I, but like, I feel like I'm in that nice little, like, there's something fucked up in him. There's something wrong with him. He likes to make his friends feel pain.
I'm not giving anything away particularly, but we do talk at one point during Men in Kilts. I say, with the whole competitiveness.
Yeah.
I said to him, hey, I mean, have you always been like this? And sort of this ridiculously obsessive, competitive side to him.
Right.
I said, have you always been like that? And he said, no, not at all. No. I said, so you're not like this with other people? He said, no, it's really only you. It's just you. And I quote, I don't only want to beat you, I want to smash you. Is that the word of a kind person?
It's an unwell man. It's an unwell man.
It was an epiphany for me. I realized that I was in a camper van with a lunatic. He was driving. And my life was literally in his hands.
I'm petrified because when last I saw him, I surprised him in London.
Oh,
I don't know if you saw this, but so at the Outlander premiere, we engineered this whole thing where we told him I couldn't make it, and then I surprised him in a hotel room with a camera crew, and we had it all on tape and made him, we saw it all. It was beautiful. It was a beautiful thing. I'll share the video with you.
Would have been superb.
And he has promised vengeance, and everything you say, John, I'm really petrified. I know somewhere right now he's scheming.
Oh, he won't let that go.
No.
Oh, no. No. I mean, it was the same with, essentially, one of the great motivators for making the second season of Men in Kilts was that he still hated me for losing at golf and rugby. I mean, the list, it's huge. And the rest of it.
Where to begin? Yeah.
He lost.
Right.
Spectacular. Constantly.
Sure.
And then he into the North Atlantic. And I think that has just haunted him, really. And,
right.
I've always imagined that while he was on set filming Outlander, he'd just be in the corner, like writing lists of things that he wants to do to torment me. And he worked through quite a few of them in this second season, for sure. Okay.
Something for us to look forward to, at least. You're still here. You're still alive. You're okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the new series, which there's obviously a ton of curiosity about. House of the Dragon. This is a prequel series to Game of Thrones, a little show that had a bit of a following. I got a chance to see the first episode. I don't think I can say much, but I think people will not be disappointed. It certainly feels Game of Thronesy, but also introduces this amazing, amazing ensemble of actors. I mean, Patty Considine, Rhys Ifans, Olivia Cooke's not even in the first episode. There's a great, great ensemble here.
I know.
Talk to me a little bit about, look, I mean, is the, when you sign on to something like this, like, is the job different when you're in a quote-unquote fantasy world. It's like the job to like ground it in a way, because I think that's what Game of Thrones did very well, and I think this show does too, which is like, yeah, they're dragons, but it has a palpable, I don't know, it's really about family and betrayal and all of that.
It's a very good, it's a very good point. And I think it's a danger that that genre could fall into, that it all just becomes terribly kind of, we are in a fantasy world, right, and everybody talks like this.
Right.
They're people who are experiencing their lives, they're admittedly fictional lives, but they just happen to be surrounded by extraordinary things. I mean, you know, if you set it during the Second World War, you would be surrounded by extraordinary things as well, just the different kind of stuff. But yeah, you do have to ground it. I mean, to some extent, when you're walking into the throne room on House of the Dragon, and there's the Iron Throne at the end of a stage that, it was the entire soundstage was that set. So it was enormous. And I had to enter with Millie, who plays Rhaenyra, young Rhaenyra.
Right.
And we both just thought, oh my God, you barely need to act. I mean, you're in this incredible costume, which is somewhat heavy, not too heavy. You've got a giant sword. You're surrounded by enormous statues. There's the Iron Throne at the end. It's all lit with flames. I mean, you're like, yeah, it's fantastic. You just, and if you can access that part of yourself, which I think actors love to do, which is really their childish side.
Yes.
It's just a playground, really. And you get, well, you have a script, but you get to just play around and be and having fun with each other in that extraordinary setting. And it's true of all of those fantasy worlds. Same with The Witcher.
Sure.
I think one thing I would say about fantasy, possibly more than anything else, and I would include Outlander in this, actually, because there is a big, big kind of fantasy element in Outlander, is that you have a lot of laughs, a lot of laughs on set. It actually seems to encourage even more childish behavior.
Is that because of just like the costumes and the absurdity of some situations? Like, oh yeah, we're all staring at a dragon. This is insane. Come on.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, like on House of the Dragon, I remember there was a scene where we encounter one of the dragons and it flies over our head. I mean, it's not giving anything away. We're there.
Wait, there are dragons in House of the Dragon, Graham? You're about to be fired.
I know. There's more than one. And there's literally, it was a laser dot flying over our heads. And the director, who I'd actually worked with many, many years before, called Greg Yatanis, we did a TV series called Empire together. And he said, okay, you know, the dragon's coming. And so you need to, you're scared. You need to react. And you're like, right, okay. So it's really big. Okay, it's huge. Yes. And it's flying right over. Okay, so on action, there was a varying degree as to how people reacted. Some people really went for it,
right?
But there's always, especially if you're in a group, you don't want to be the one that completely embarrasses themselves.
You all have to be at the same level.
You're weeping, you know, the sight of the dragon. So I remember my first take. It was more of a head bob. It was more of a kind of like, there's a dragon. Oh, there it is. Oh, it's going over there. Some people were like, oh, God! Throwing themselves to the ground. And I thought, too much. That's going too far.
Right.
And so there were all different levels of reaction. And Greg, and I thought I'd done a fantastic job. And Greg came up and said, Graham, you really need to react. And I went, well, I was reacting, Greg. He said, no, this is terrifying. This is a dragon. And you're seeing it flying over your head. And I go, but I just don't feel I would be that scared. And
it's not his first dragon. You've seen others.
Exactly. I'm Lord Commander of the King's Guard. I've seen many dragons.
Yeah.
But he insisted that I reacted more severely to the sight of the dragon. But that's the kind of thing that you have a huge laugh doing that stuff. Risa Fans particularly was... It was very, he won't mind me saying this, It was very difficult getting through a scene with Reese. He was constantly trying to make you laugh, deliberately mangling the lines, calling people by absurd names, even more absurd than their actual names in the show.
Right.
He would anything to make you laugh. So, well, and we did.
So. Well, let's practice reacting to a dragon. I want to see if I can do it. Okay, so what level, give me 1 to 10, what level of reaction should we have as we watch this dragon pass over us right now?
You? Yeah, you, yeah. Or both of us?
We're both of us. We're both going to see the same dragon pass through our screens.
Okay, so I think, okay, we're not complete cowards.
Okay, but that's a stretch for me, but I'll try it.
Okay. No, well, this is in the context of the moment.
Okay, okay,
you
know,
obviously in real life, you're a complete coward. Yeah. But, you know, we're not complete cowards, but we're also not stupid.
Okay. So, again, a stretch, but okay, I'll try it.
Yeah, I know. I'm identifying the very two things that you are actually.
What I'm known for, cowardice and stupidity.
Yes. A frightened buffoon.
You're sounding more and more like your friend every day. This is reminding me. Yeah.
I'm going for a steady 5.
Okay.
Okay. So I'll cue us in.
Okay, which direction am I looking?
And it's going to be coming from my right. So yes, we're both looking in the same direction.
Okay.
I'll take the glasses off just in case it gets too violent. Okay. So the dragon is coming. 3, 2, 1. Oh, Josh.
What did I do?
I just caught it out of the corner of my eye. That was, what? What
hopefully
was that?
Hopefully folks are just listening to this and it was wasted on them.
I don't care if they listen. They need to know. He is terrible.
This is why I still have not gotten my Outlander cameo. I've been campaigning for years. It's just, I'm going to settle for men in kilts. Reality is where it's at.
No, seriously, I would love to see that. I think what you need to be, let me think, if you were doing Outlander, I think you need to be the sort of the village drunken idiot that the camera you can be seated for it, so you don't need to do any walking and talking.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, good.
So just like give you like a big mug of ale or something like that, a big slouchy hat, a bit of a plaid, and then people are walking past you and then they look down, the camera catches you on the left, and you just say, I don't know, morning Jimmy. See if you can.
Morning, Jimmy.
Okay, you look like you're having a stroke.
I had the right mug for it and everything.
You had the right mug.
Although I guess, to be fair, in an Outlander scene, you wouldn't have a mug that says Outlander on it. That would be a little odd.
That
might take people out of the mug.
That would be actually brilliant. If we had that. Yes, that we had branded, like Sam was drinking from a bottle of Sassenach whiskey.
Exactly.
During a scene.
I wouldn't put it past him. It's going to happen at some point.
Well, he did it in every scene in Men in Kilts.
Right.
I couldn't believe it. Every single time we stopped, he goes, sure, any chance we could get this? And I said, mate.
Shameless.
This is not some extended commercial for your whiskey brand. And he went, isn't it?
It's all it is for him now. It's one big whiskey ad. I'm going to look at some questions from our audience. Let's see. Okay.
Yes.
Sandra wants to know, will you be playing any part in the Outlander prequel? Any chance of a young version of your character? It's the parents,
well,
as you know.
I mean, you know, it's obviously I look so young as it is.
No makeup required. Yep.
No makeup required. I don't know. Would it be a teenage Dougal? I mean, it would be a stretch for me to play myself as a teenager, but I'm always willing to try.
Okay. Fair enough. The old college try. Linda wants to know, what is the project that you've been working on in Montana? I've been curious about that, too. You spent so much of your summer in Montana, right?
Yeah. It was a great movie. It's called Somewhere in Montana. And it is a modern day, it's a ranch western kind of film. I play the rancher, a guy called John Alexander. And without going into the whole thing, what I loved about it is that it's a film about tolerance and listening to others, really. That there are two groups of people represented in the film. that are very different to each other in terms of how they view the world, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And while neither of those groups particularly ends up thinking, oh, you're right, I'm wrong, because they get to know each other, they respect each other. And I think one of the reasons I was so keen to do it is that it contains within it a really, really important, timely lesson, or not a lesson, just a comment really on the on the world, which is it's okay to not agree with everybody and for people not to agree with you, as long as you treat each other respectfully. And that's something that I worry about in the world that we're living in at the moment. And this film really, really, really addresses it in a very clever way.
Yeah.
Not in a kind of schmaltzy way. It's there, you know, you're like, nobody's shying away from anything. It's really good. So I had a wonderful experience and I loved Montana. I just fell in love with the place. I thought it was gorgeous.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're spot on. I mean, obviously we talked about sci-fi and fantasy. Genre always is just the prism by which we can look at the world. And Western is nothing if not one of our great genres. So it makes total sense.
One of the great American genres, yeah.
All right, I'm going to invite Karen on screen. Karen, you have a question. I hope you're prepared. Let's see if this works. Here we go. Oh, boy. Let's see if this is my first attempt. Wish me luck.
Okay.
Wish Karen luck.
Karen. Rather you than me.
Yeah,
I know. We would never get to see Karen if I was doing this.
Karen, are you there? If you don't pop up, I'll just ask your question for you, Karen. Don't worry. Oh, here she is.
Oh, something's happening. Oh.
Hi,
Karen. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Of course. What's your question for Graham?
My question was, if you're going to be writing a memoir like Sam Heughan did.
Am I going to be?
Yes.
Well, it's definitely crossed my mind. I think, you know, what I'm interested in, if I was to do that, is not so much a kind of chronology of experience, but really just an examination, I suppose, of what it is to do the kind of thing that I've done as an actor. It's a very strange world and a very, you know, I think there are perceptions about the acting business that are not correct. And, you know, I think that there's a glamour attached to it and all the rest of it. And there are glamorous things attached to it, that's true, but there's also all sorts of other stuff. I'm actually reading at the moment David Niven's autobiography.
Oh, that's a famous one, I feel like.
I've been reading it for decades and I finally got around to reading it, and that's a great memoir, because he's honest, and I think that's the key, to be honest with yourself. And in doing so, providing something to other people to read that is truthful. And I think that's true of any creative endeavor, to be honest. Acting, you know, you do it. I think the best way of describing it is, if I was to do it, I would be doing it for myself. And in doing that, hopefully other people might be interested. So.
Was that, like, if I was talking to you when you first started acting, and presumably that was in theater, I would guess, back in the early days, like, what was the ambition? What was the dream back then? I mean, was there an actor on the pedestal? Was there a career to aspire to? I mean, what were you thinking? Was it a life in the theater? What were you thinking?
Oh, yeah, you know, it's interesting. Because I think really, if I'm honest, when I started, I mean, the first job I did actually was, I was an extra on a TV show called The Master of Ballantrae, which is a very famous Scottish novel by Robert Louis Stevenson. And Michael York and Timothy Dalton were the leads. And I had like a day, 2 days on it or something. I was so excited. I absolutely loved it. I loved the costumes. I mean, and actually, ironically, it's set in the same period as Outland. So, weirdly enough, yeah. It's kind of odd. I hadn't actually thought about that until that moment, but that was in 1983 or something. And I was so excited. My father actually took a photo of me. He froze the video, and there was me and Michael York on screen together for like a nanosecond, and he took a picture, and I still have the picture. But I loved film and TV, and I was a huge Clint Eastwood fan. Huge. You know, he was my idol, really. And I used to stand in front of the mirror and try and make myself look like him. I would furrow my brow, I would do that. And, you know, when I was 12. And it was pathetic. But so really, if I'm honest, in answer to your question, very long-winded way of saying it, my ambition always lay more in film and television than in theatre. Don't get me wrong, I love theatre, and I've loved doing theatre, and I've been really lucky in the work that I've been able to do, especially in Scotland. I got to be in all sorts of shows that I wouldn't have been able to be in. And I just loved working. I loved the process. I loved the collaboration. Yeah. That's what I really enjoyed. I was never particularly motivated by all those sort of slightly more venal things like, you know, fame and money and, you know, glory awards or anything like that. I mean, everybody fantasizes about going sure. and getting an Oscar, but, you know, to be honest with you, I don't anymore. I don't think about that stuff. I just want to do interesting work, and that's what's always motivated me. And it just so happens that for the last 16 years, which is the last time I was on stage, it's all been on film and television. But it's been, you know, it's great. You know, you get to, I've been a Roman, I've been a Highlander, I've been a dwarf, I've been, you know, and those are the things, to go back to that whole childhood thing.
Yeah,
that's what you all dream of when you're children, being a cowboy, you know. And so all of those moments were very meaningful to me as sort of fulfillment of dreams, I suppose. Yeah. And that's, I think, as long as you stay a dreamer as an actor, I think you won't go far wrong.
Do you have I've been asking folks on the podcast the last couple of years about comfort movies. Just off the top of your head, is there a movie that you would deem a comfort movie for you? It could be an Eastwood movie or anything that you've returned to that you find centers you, calms you, brings you back to childhood, whatever comfort means to you, something that jumps out?
Yeah, well, there's a few for different reasons, I suppose. The Princess Bride is I love The Princess Bride. If I met Carrie Elwes or Mandy Patinkin, and actually I did meet oh my god, I'm going to forget her name now.
What, Robin Wright Penn?
Yes, Robin Wright, yes. Yeah. I met her when and it was a very strange moment, actually. I was doing The Finest Hours, and her then partner Ben Foster was in The Finest Hours.
Yes.
And we were all in a house in Chatham in Massachusetts, and I was in the bedroom upstairs. Everyone was downstairs sort of chatting. And I just wanted to be alone. And I was reading Carrie Elwes's memoir.
Yeah, The Princess Bride memoir. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Princess Bride.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I was reading that. Great book. Reading away, you know, reading about Robin and blah, blah, blah. Shut the book. Thought, oh, I'll go down and say hi. And there was Robin Wright sitting in the living room. And I was like, and I was so, I couldn't tell her. I couldn't.
You're like hiding the book. You're like, never mind.
I just be reading about you. I couldn't, but I just thought, life is strange. But so The Princess Bride, definitely. Yeah. I've watched that many times. Mouse Hunt. Have you seen Mouse Hunt?
Wait, Mouse Hunt, the Gore Verbinski movie? The
with Nathan Lane.
Yeah.
And Lee, yeah. Lee, what's his name?
I know exactly what you mean.
Christopher Walken. That's... I love that film so much.
Random but amazing. I love it, Graham.
I've watched it with kids. I've watched it. I probably watched that at least six times. It's such a lovely movie. And for any of you who haven't watched it, do watch it. And I won't spoil anything about it. It's just a delight. So that, and then completely the other way,
yeah.
Zulu. Zulu.
Oh, wait, Michael Caine? Is that...
Yeah, Michael Caine's first film.
Yes.
Produced and starring Stanley Baker. Stanley okay. Baker, written and directed by Cy Enfield, all shot in South Africa with the Zulu nation involved, the grandson of King Cetewayo, who was the person at Rorke's Drift, I mean, I'm huge into history and all of those.
Yeah, yeah, that's all. Incredible. Checks all the boxes. Yep.
It's an incredible episode in history. And I love that film. I've watched that probably a dozen times. Oh, wow. And it doesn't matter. The music, the performances, the Technicolor, big screen. Oh, it's fantastic.
I love it.
Yeah, those are.
Those are great. Michael Caine has a good memoir or two, as I recall as well.
Indeed.
All right. Kay has a question here. What will be your next mega franchise? Well, they're greedy. They want more. We got Hobbit. We got Outlander. We got Witcher, House of Dragon, Castlevania. What's the ultimate for you? Yeah, let's think. So Graham. Yeah, exactly. We haven't done. I mean, in the voiceover world, you've covered some like Star Wars and Marvel, but like live action wise, you haven't.
That's true. Yes, that's true. My eldest daughter is obsessed with the idea of me being in a Marvel project. Obsessed. She barely a week goes by where she's saying, you know, have you got into a Marvel project yet? I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm busy, but you know, one day you never know. So nice. Yeah, that would be amazing. I grew up like everybody else with that world. You know, in the whole Spider-Man franchise. I mean, I was a huge Spider-Man fan when I was a kid, those kind of comics. Star Wars as well. Yes, I was a huge, huge Star Wars fan. You know, those TV series spin-offs, I think, have been really, really amazing. So I'd, you know, that kind of world. Or indeed, this is what I think as well, a world or a story that hasn't been written yet. You know, there's out there somewhere. At this moment, there is somebody writing something that is just going to blow everybody away. And it might not happen for 5 years or whatever, but it's going to be amazing. And that's the great thing about this industry. You know, there's so many people. I have a really good friend, actually, who I met him. He was a barista in Santa Monica. And he used to serve me coffee, and we got talking a lot, and we became friends. And he is now writing for a Marvel movie. He was an amazing. Aspiring writer, and he is now writing it. And I love that. I love that, you know, there he is working hard and everything like that. And then that dream, that world came true for him. And so there are people as we speak that are either about to write something or in the middle of writing something that is going to be truly incredible.
Amazing. Do you still have to audition at this point, Graham? Does the body of work speak for itself? Are you willing? Are you like game, or is it kind of like look at my 123 IMDb credits?
No, I honestly, if they want me to nowadays it seems to be just self tapes. That's what right. we do. I don't, right. you know, I haven't met another human for these sort of things for a very long time. Yeah. Sometimes they are offers. Which is obviously very, very nice, and sometimes not. But I've always loved, and it's a sort of arrogance, I suppose, but it's also what motivated me when I first went to America, was that I always wanted the opportunity, just the chance to show people what I could do.
Yeah.
That's all I wanted. Just put me in the room, let me try. If you don't like it, that's fine, but just let me try. And so I've always carried that with me, that if I'm given the chance, then it becomes out of my hands.
Right.
But I've always wanted to have the chance. So I'm not fussy about, you know, if somebody says, well, we really want to meet Graham, or we want to sell him to self-tape. I'm not going to go, oh, no, I don't do that. I don't mind at all.
I'm curious because, look, we've talked about like these major kind of franchises with these built-in kind of audiences, and you've been in some of the biggest, literally, that exist. And yet, like, I've met you through Outlander, which has a very sizable audience, but it's not the Hobbit audience. It's not the Lord of the Rings in terms of size, but it is, I would argue, in terms of passion and in terms of just and I say this in the nicest way, obsession. And I've experienced that on the periphery. Do you feel that too? Like, do you feel a difference in the kind of fandom that Outlander has brought you as opposed to just the sheer volume that something like Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit brought you?
Sure. Yes. I would say yes. I don't think I've ever encountered a fan base that is as dedicated as the Outlander fan base, and it's great. You know, it's a wonderful thing. I mean, you know, mostly if people speak to me out in the street or whatever, they talk about Outlander. Sometimes they'll really surprise you and talk to you about something completely. Like, I remember you in Stones, like Red Dwarf, and I'll go, oh yeah, I mean, that was 24 years ago. And so it varies, but Outlander fans are, they are incredibly loyal and supportive. And that's, you know, I know Sam, myself, anybody actually, Duncan, Katrina, anybody involved in it is really, really appreciative of that.
Yeah.
And don't take it lightly either. Because, you know, you have to be, you have to be creative yourself. You know, you have to have one half of your brain when you're doing, for instance, something like Outlander. When we were filming it, we had to make it our own. You know, I had to make Dougal the Dougal I wanted him to be, and with collaboration with other people. But at the same time, you are aware that there is literally a group of millions of people who have a very strong idea who Dougal or Jamie or Claire is. And you have to be mindful of that. So it's a tricky line to walk. But I think that on the whole, the way that it's been handled by the writers and the producers and the cast and everything and the fans together, that we've all moved forward together with the show, which is really remarkable, actually.
It's been fun, especially, like, look, at first it was basically Sam and Katrina that I got to know, and then, like, as the years have gone on, they finally let me meet their friends. I feel like they were just, like, trying to keep me from everybody, and now I appreciate what a great ensemble this is, and how you all are just, like, such a great, fun group, and have just, like, senses of humor and the right attitude, and it's just, it's a joy to...
Well, that was the thing when we did it, when we first did it. You know, partly because it was essentially Katrina's first job.
Right.
It wasn't Sam's first job, but it was his first major, real big role.
Yeah.
And we were all thrown in together. And that created immediately a very tight group. So all those Highlanders, Katrina, Lotta, you know, Gary, all of these guys together, we really bonded and were working with each other. So there was no kind of hierarchy at all, which always makes for a much better product.
Are you already, look, we don't know when the next season of Men in Kilts is, but are you, do you have the third location in mind? Do you think back to Scotland? Do you think another locale? Have you decided or still deciding or what?
Opportunity to do a third series, I mean, I think the logical place would be North America. I would really be keen. I know, and Sam, I know, it's the same. I think we're both very keen on the idea of exploring the Canadian-American links there. You know, it's just about navigating through the country. I mean, when I was in Montana, I met a Native American gentleman called Donald McDonald, and he is descended from the McDonald's of Glencoe. There was a huge settlement in that area of Montana, the direct descendants of McKeon of Glencoe, the famous massacre. They came over and settled in that part of Montana. And there are so many wonderful stories to tell of the interaction and the relationships between Native American tribes and Klansmen, Highlanders coming over in the 18th and 19th centuries. I think there's so much to talk about with that. So that would be where I would want to visit.
Sold. Hey, it's more convenient for me to crash. It's perfect. Look, I think the bonus of this conversation today, look, the reason to do it was to catch up with you, and I always love chatting with you. You're always so generous with your time and are good-natured and good-humored, and I love it. But the bonus, honestly, is just infuriating Sam and how jealous he's going to be when he sees that we've been chatting for an hour today. So
it's great, isn't it? That's what gets me up in the morning.
It's a win-win.
It's a total win-win. I mean, I woke up this morning and I thought, today's the day that I managed to just rub it in his face again. And I know it's petty. I know.
You got to play on the level he's playing on. He's that. Yeah. We have to be that.
He brought us to this point. And so we're down there in the mud with him. And
Look at this, Sam. This is a love affair right here, and you can't touch it.
Yeah, we're really happy without you, Sam. Ha ha ha. I'm actually just waiting, and that's one of the reasons I've turned my phone off, because I know that he would be just, you know, shut up. Nobody cares. You're so bald. You're old.
He's probably watching us right now. Congratulations, sir. Thanks for taking the time out. Enjoy the rest of your run on The Witcher. I can't wait to see that. And I know the audience is going to be thrilled with this one. House of the Dragon, it really lives up to the pedigree.
House of the Dragon, I don't want to tempt fate, but I truly believe that people will love this show. Yes.
Has another one. I was going to say, I didn't even mention my beloved Matt Smith, whom I'm obsessed with. He's amazing in this show,
too. Oh, are you also obsessed with Matt Smith? You're obsessed with quite a lot of people.
I have a problem, if you haven't figured it out.
I mean, just off camera, are there like a shrine of
people? Do I have anything new? I probably have other incriminating things near me, but I'm not going to show you.
Balls of Matt. And, you know, I'm just curious. No, Matt is also a very, very nice guy.
Yeah.
Very funny. And we had enormous laughs. His sword is called Dark Sister.
In the show, or just
in the show, it's mentioned many times. It's called Dark Sister, and every single time, and I'm not ashamed to admit this, but every single time, he would appear with the sword. I would stand there and wait for him to pass, and go, "Well, watch out! Here comes Dark Sister." Yes. And every time he would laugh. It's pathetic. I know it's pathetic.
We're all just children. We're really just still children.
This is the atmosphere that we created on set. It was a childish, very, very sad atmosphere. But
thank you all for watching today. We'll see you on the next one. And my biggest thanks of all, of course, to the one and only Mr. Graham McTavish. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Josh. Always a pleasure.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pushed to do this by Josh.